The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Hey, I'm back. 13 hours later, came in here at 7 in the morning to do Kick Off Your Sunday with my man, Andy Madison. I'm 82. I'm now back here at 9 o'clock for hour 2 of Sports Talk 1240. I know you all missed me, so I have to give the people what they want. Make my way back into the studio, give you another hour. Got a fun show for you tonight. Got two good guests, including Chris Garofalo, the head coach of Stony Brook University's hockey team. He'll be joining me in a few minutes. And then on the second half of the show, we have Zach Braziller from the New York Post. We'll be talking about the absolute tragic ending of the Giants-Eagles game that I'm sitting on the couch watching that game, and when my jaw hit the ground when that winning field goal went through the uprights, I could not believe what I saw. We'll get into that in a little bit. But before we bring the coach on, I love social media. Social media is one of the greatest things out there, at which, you know, for the quick shameless plug, you can follow me on Twitter at Andy_Shirkov. You can follow the station at SportsTalk 1240 at AM 1240 WGBB. Whole bunch of different ones here you can follow and see what everything's going on over here. And I know you're going to want to do that, so make sure you get on that. The Vegas Golden Knights, newest team out in the NHL. And God bless the HR team that found whoever runs their Twitter account, because it is the greatest, I think the greatest sports account of any of the professional teams, followed closely by the Colorado Rockies. In terms of fan engagement and talking with people, the Vegas Golden Knights are top-notch. They posted a GIF after they scored a goal from the Mighty Ducks where Lane Smith, as the head coach, pops his collar. I respond back to them, just remember, he lost at the end, so, you know, be careful what you wish for. They respond back to me saying, yeah, but it was in my cousin Vinny, so everything's okay. I then proceeded to go on a My Cousin Vinny quoting match with whoever's running the social media account for the Vegas Golden Knights. And we basically got through a good portion of the movie and hit all the best lines. It was a lot of sequence, but it's okay. So when you can have somebody who can, in the middle of the game, no less, in the middle of a game, granted it's the preseason, I'm sure during the regular season, this person's not going to be doing this as often, but that they could sit there and quote movies with some random schmo who sends them a tweet is really amazing. So to the people who hired them at the Vegas Golden Knights, I just want to say thank you, because you've made somebody very, very happy, and not just me, hundreds of thousands of other people who follow your account and see what you do on a daily basis. And I can't wait to see what else you guys are going to do going forward as the season starts, which season starts in a couple weeks. I know I'm excited. Got the Rangers ready. They got a few more preseason games left before they start against Colorado. And I think they're primed for a good season. I'm ready to see what they got. But we'll get to them in a little bit. We're waiting on Coach Garofalo to come on. One of the big things today, and I'm going to touch on it briefly, and I'll get back to it a little later. In the NFL today, it was a big day in terms of a very polarizing, divisive topic that's really kind of taken the entire country and kind of placed people on very different sides of the spectrum, and that's the protest of kneeling during the national anthem. Donald Trump, the President of the United States, came out yesterday and said players who do so should be fired, or in sports terms, released from their contracts for doing that, which an owner does have the right to do if he so chooses to do so. Granted, I don't think that's the smartest idea, because that's going to cause that owner a huge firestorm if they do that. Because if they go ahead and they cut somebody for doing that, and you have other players who were looking into doing that as well, now they're going to be very upset with their owner and their general manager, and they're going to walk off the field and not play for them, and now you have a huge PR disaster. that's kind of where there's a very fine line, and there's really not any kind of middle ground, and that's a scary thought, where if you're trying, like, some people just don't want to pick sides, but unfortunately, people are going to ask, how do you feel? Do you say that they shouldn't be kneeling during the national anthem, or do you say, hey, that's fine, you know, they're sending out a message? Yesterday, after President Trump put out those tweets, you saw a lot of big names in sports get together kind of in unison and basically go off on the president, saying, like, hey, this is why we're doing this, and almost saying to him, and LeBron James pretty much outright said it to him, you are an insult to the office. When he disinvited Steph Curry from coming to the White House prior to the celebration, he's now setting off a huge problem where he's now fighting people within his own country. He's already alienating people all over the world. Maybe trying to set battles that he doesn't need to be in is not the smartest idea. Honestly, I believe he should not be sticking his nose in this, because there's just no reason for it. He's got so many other things that he needs to be doing, and it's just not, I don't see the reason why the president has to become a part of this. What a player does during the national anthem, whether you find it disrespectful or not, that's the player's right as an American citizen. That First Amendment does give him or her the privilege to do so. Granted, an owner can say, hey, this is a breach of a personal conduct contract, that, you know, there are personal conduct clauses in people's contracts that say, hey, you can't do certain things. So there is a time and a place to send these messages out. Maybe doing so on the football field is not the best place. But the other side of that, that could be, for them, the best place to do it, because they know that there's 80,000 people in the stands watching. There's a few million people watching at home, and they're all going to see this. And that's how you get your message out without having to even say a word. And it's just a really, it's interesting to see the different dynamics, how everything is working out. Where today, there were over 100 players that are trying to send a message, and that was over multiple teams, including the local team, the New York Giants, in their game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and we'll get to that when we have Zach Braziller on later. A few Giants did take a knee during the national anthem, including Damon Harrison, among others. You had the New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions. They were, about 20 of them took a knee, and they did that to boos from their own home crowd. This is a team that won the Super Bowl. You would think that even though it's a message that people don't necessarily agree with, when you win the Super Bowl, you figure most people are going to get a pass for that. Apparently not. You had teams like the New York Jets locking arms, all standing together, locked arms, with their owners, with their general manager, the coaches, the whole nine yards. And personally, I think that was the best display, because you don't have anybody kneeling, which many find disrespectful, but you're showing a sense of unity amongst the players and everyone else that we're not going to stand for any kind of inequality. And that's, some people are never going to change, and that's something that I think people need to accept. No matter what you do or say, no matter what you don't do or say, some people are never going to change. They're going to have a certain mindset, no matter how archaic it is, that you're trying to send a message to the wrong person. It's the people that have the impressionable minds that you want to send that message to, because those are the ones who can help make change. Someone who's not going to listen to the message It's not going to matter. You have to cater to the audience. And the NFL audience the majority of the NFL audience finds it very disrespectful that there are players kneeling during the national anthem. One of the big ones I saw today, and I thought it was very interesting, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They agreed as a team to not go out for the national anthem prior to their game against the Chicago Bears. And they did it as a way to avoid the politics of it. And that's a reasonable answer. Except for one. One member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Alejandro Villanueva. He served 3 tours in Afghanistan. And he went out during the anthem, stood with his hand over his heart. And that's something I can respect. Knowing that he went and served our country. And he went and stood out there with the fans is something I respect. Well, I'll get back to that in a little while. Right now I'm going to introduce the head coach of Stony Brook Hockey, who's getting ready for his season opener this coming Saturday, Chris Garofalo. Coach, thank you for joining me and taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to jump right into it. You have a couple big players that aren't going to be back next year, including your top 2 scorers who are going to be playing pro hockey in Germany. What kind of impact do you feel that that's going to have on this year's team, that you don't have guys like Chris Demke and JT Hall?
I mean, not having guys like Chris Demke and JT Hall is obviously going to impact us severely, but, you know, that's where everybody else has an opportunity to step up, and we brought some guys in that we feel that can help fill those gaps. But, you know, Chris and JT, I'm wishing them the best. I know that they're over there in Germany working hard and getting to see another part of the world, which is amazing. And, you know, it just speaks volume about our program and, you know, where we've come from. And, two, I mean, we've had 3 guys sign pro contracts in 3 years now. And it's just a testament to the work ethic by the boys and the organization that we have here. So, but as far as, you know, this coming year, we're excited. We have a lot of young guys that are looking to be eager and they see the opportunity that's available in front of them as far as, you know, openings and positions availability. We're looking forward to seeing what they could do when it comes to a game. I'm pretty impressed, though, in practice so far, what they've been doing.
And you guys open the season this Saturday night at the Rinks in Hamburg against Kent State. What have you seen from Kent State that you can cater to how you're preparing for this weekend series?
I'll be honest with you. Every year it's different. So looking at old film from the year before, it doesn't really help that much. I mean, it gives you a little bit of a measure stick, like you said. You know, we've lost guys that are key, so we're going to be a different look. So, you know, I know they're bigger boys. They have a size to them, and they're more physical. But, again, I don't know if that's the same for this year. As far as, you know, we're going to play our game, and we're going to dictate the tempo. I think that's the biggest thing that I always say to guys. We're not going to play to someone else's game. You know, there's a reason why we're so successful, and there's a reason why we're one of the best clubs in the country. And that's not because we're bowing down to other teams. Yeah, but obviously respect everybody. But let us dictate the tempo and, you know, let us have them counter what we're doing.
And, Coach, you guys come into this season ranked number 9 in the first ACHA polls that came out. And this is coming off a season where last year you made it to the national quarterfinals, where then you, to put it lightly, got the short end of a questionable call against Ohio. How does that add to the attitude that you have coming into this year?
You know, swagger is something we talk about in the locker room all the time. You know, it's something that I can't teach. An individual has to just have swagger. And there's a difference between being, you know, having swagger and being overly confident or cocky. I feel that that comes from within. You just have to believe in yourself, believe in your teammates, everybody around you. Last year is last year. I mean, puck could have bounced any different way. It is what it is. The call happened. You know, we can argue it 3 different ways. But the ref made a decision. He said that basically puck was going to go in the net if it didn't get dislodged. And as the rule stands, if the guy's in a shooting motion and the puck gets dislodged, the net gets dislodged, and it was going to go in, the ref has the right to say that was good, that's a good goal. So the net being knocked off is not the wrong call. It's just the fact that it happened. And, you know, again, it could have been shooting wide. I don't even know if it was going to actually go into the area where the net was. But, hey, it's over. We move on. We worry about this year. And that just talks about nationals. I mean, think about it. 1 game elimination. So something like that happens, you could be going on or you can be going home. So the only thing we can do is control ourselves and control what we have in front of us. We have to control, you know, what we're doing away from the rink, how we're working out, how we're exercising, how we're being, you know, disciplined in all areas. So, and then, you know, put our best foot forward when we get to that opportunity. But before we can even talk about this year's Nationals, we have to get there. And it starts this weekend with Kent State. I mean, that's all we're thinking about right now is our first opponent. And then once that's over, we'll worry about our next opponent because can't look at the end. You got to look at the beginning and work through it.
And we're talking with Chris Garofalo, the head coach at Stony Brook University. Coach, talk to us about some of the new players that are going to be joining your roster this year and what they bring to the table.
So, I mean, we added a few defensemen that have really helped fill the gaps of Mike Cartwright and Alex Miller. Brendan Pepe is a 6'3", you know, 200-pound, you know, defenseman. He's tall, lanky. He's got an offensive touch to him, ability. He's a complete player, in my opinion. I like to call him. His capability is in between Mike Cartwright, who is very smooth, smart, playmaker type of defenseman. And Alex Miller, who is the best defensive defenseman we've had so in years. So he's going to be a big cog in our wheel. And as far as the other defenseman is Kyle Hoon. He's a guy that came in from a D3 transfer. And Kyle's he played offense most of his life, transitioned to defense a few years ago. He's really has a good eye. He makes really, really good decisions with the puck. His first pass is always on the tape, so... and they're both big guys too. Kyle's 6'1", so we're excited about our D-Corps. And then we have on offense, we brought in Joey Slevin, who's small, fast. I mean, his speed and his stick handling abilities are unreal. He's a very east-west kind of guy, but he's very elusive and he's tenacious. He works both ends of the ice. He works these forechecks and he backchecks. You know, he's a guy that wants the puck. And I think that's important. He wants the puck. He's not looking to just get rid of it right away. So he's got confidence and swagger that I talk about. We have guys that came in January that I expect to step up, even more, like Brad Riccardi, Kevin Murphy. Those guys made an impact right away, which helped us do well at Nationals. I expect good things from them. We named our captains this week. We picked Frank Schurting is going to be wearing the C. And then we have Brendan Coelho, Frank Kasha, and Matt Crockett, all wearing the A's. You know, that we're looking forward to their leadership and what they bring into the room. Frank's a very passionate, vocal leader, that is Schurting, and I think Kasha's also. So we're looking to see how that dynamic works. Offensively, we also have guys like Palmieri back. You know, we brought in a young guy, a freshman from Colorado, Jack Nevikosi. He's a tenacious little player. His size is not big, but he plays big. So I think he's going to be a nice addition. So we have a good group of guys here. I mean, I'm looking for younger guys that played last year, like Mike Cassina. I'm hoping he steps up and plays well, and he could skate like the wind. He's got all the tools. If he could put it all together, he could be, you know, an impact player. So and then obviously our goaltending is stable. I mean, we've still got Yoder and Rathwell, and we got Shipman, and we brought in another kid, Lockwood, who's very strong as well. I mean, he's really impressed us a lot in the past month. So I think all around we're balanced. I think this year, to replace the 100 points that we lost between JT Hall and Chris Stemke, it's going to take a team effort. We're not going to have a guy that's going to have 50 points. It's going to be everybody's got to contribute, which is good. I want to spread out offense. I want everybody to be spread out and as far as points, and that means that all lines are productive. You can't have everything go on one person or two people's back. Everything has to be spread out, and if we play the way we've been practicing as far as our energy and our effort, I mean, we really have a high tempo in practice. The guys are really working hard. And this is probably one of the best beginning of the seasons that I've seen from an effort perspective in a long time. So, I'm excited about that effort. And I always tell the guys in the locker room, nobody's going to ever, you know, beat us because of lack of effort. If we don't win, it's not going to be because we didn't have effort. You know, that's the key. Like, I can handle if we don't win, but I'm not going to handle it if we don't have the effort, we just didn't show up for the night. So we'll see what brings. But we're excited to start the season this weekend.
Yeah. Looking at the roster, like you're talking about Frank Schurting getting the captain, and having watched him for the last 3 years, you know, he was a freshman the first year that I started with you guys, and you know, he's really blossomed as an offensive defenseman having had eight power play goals last year, which is a phenomenal number in 36 games. That's the kind of person you want leading the point on the man advantage.
Yeah, he's a his shot is an NHL caliber shot. Frank Kostka too. I mean, they're just their shots are very strong, and they're big. You know, Frank himself is he's a big boy, and he's tough to get him off the puck. But he's definitely steps up his intensity, his drive, his passion. I mean, he's an all around great player, and we're excited that he's still here, and he's looking forward to leading this team. He's really in the locker room even last year, where in the A he was the most vocal captain we had, and no disrespect to JT, he was phenomenal too, but Frank was a vocal voice. You know, he's not afraid to say what he feels, and he knows how to get the locker room settled down when it needs to be, and picked up when it needs to be. So Frank is a great player, and he's just gotten better and better every year. So we're looking forward to his senior year, see how he does.
And looking at over the last 5 years or so, I think two of the biggest consistencies that you've had, and you can attest to this, strong defense in terms of the caliber player and incredibly solid goaltending. Over the last 5 years, you've had multiple 30-win seasons, deep runs, and I think the back end has a big thing to do with that.
100%. I mean, you know, look, I'll tell anybody this, and any coach, I don't care who it is, how are you successful? Winning starts on the phone. I mean, somebody told me that many, many years ago. What does that mean? You got to recruit. If you don't recruit, you're going to die. And it's a very stressful piece of the puzzle. It's a very important piece. It's very time-consuming. It's annoying at times, but you have to do it. Matter of fact, today and yesterday I was at the rink, at Dick Sills looking at recruiting. So it's a necessary evil. So we've been strong on the D end and the goaltending side because we bring in the right players, and then they buy into the system. Our D is, you know, winning starts from the goaltender out. You've heard that before. So, I mean, we had Jones and Wilms and, you know, Yoder and even Rathwell. I mean, we have a really strong – our goaltending has been stellar. And defense, too. I mean, we expect our D to be contributing a lot this year. We've told our forwards, you know, you got to push it out to the points, go to the net, you know, points, shoot, and try to get a tip in, you know, forwards. I mean, we want to cycle it down low and push it to the points, so, and then get to the net. I think we have the ability to do so. The two defensemen that came in with this Pepe and Moon, those guys have that offensive ability, which is nice. And then you already have Kostka and Schoening to also add to that. So I think we're in a really good spot from having our offense be able to contribute.
And how different is it going to recruiting on the club level compared to the NCAA level?
It's twice as hard. Because unfortunately, you know, a lot of the players that are playing junior hockey want to go and play NCAA, and they think that's the, you know, cream of the creme. And unfortunately, or fortunately, it's not. You know, if you can go play Division I hockey, I'm all about it. You know, hey, look, go play NCAA Division I, and, you know, good for you. I'll help you pack your bags. But when you're talking about NCAA Division III, where the caliber is the same. As ACHA D1, not all teams, just like not all teams are the same in Division III. It's the same way. But unfortunately, it does fall on deaf ears. But what I position when I'm recruiting is a few things. One, we're a very strong education, top 100 in the United States, top 1% title in the world. Two, we're very affordable, especially from New York. And three, our hockey program is legitimate. Look what we've done. I've had three kids sign pro contracts in 3 years, not to mention how many times we've gone to the nationals, quarterfinals, semifinals, national championship games, you know. And so our track record speaks for itself. So, you know, if a kid is not educated, I just direct them to our website, tell them to look at some videos, do their homework, and I think they'll see the same thing. It's ego that prevents people from coming to the ACHA. These young men, they think that they're stronger than this, but they'll go to a weaker Division III team that's not as good just because it has a label. And it's also a lot of the D3s, unfortunately, are not very strong academically, and the ones that are very, very expensive. So when you add all those things up and you kind of lead them down the path and say, you're a really good student, hopefully you find one. Financially, do you want to pay $50,000, about a year to go to a school that's compatible academically in Division III. So, you know, you kind of lead them down the path, and you hope that they realize it and they come here. So, no, I have to go after 20 kids to get one. I'll be honest with you. It's a 20-to-1 ratio. I need to go after 20 guys. Half of them can't get in because their academics aren't strong enough. Then out of the 10, it's probably half of those wouldn't even blink about coming here because it's too ego of a hit. So you're left with two that you're chasing, and you maybe get one. So it becomes a 20-to-1 ratio. So it's a very, very, very challenging process. It's a very frustrating process. But like I said, if you're not doing it, you're not going to be successful, period. So that's really where I always talk. My famous thing that I tell guys, you're getting a Mercedes for the price of a Honda. That's Stony Brook. It's a great school, great price. And in the end, when they're 27, 28 years old, most of them, hockey's going to be something they do on the once a week in a men's league before they have to get up to the next day for work. So why you put hockey over your education is beyond me. But, again, that's something that I haven't been able to figure out in all the years of recruiting. So a lot of them do it, though.
All right, Coach, we're going to ask you one last question before we let you go. This is strictly conjecture. If given the opportunity and the resources were there, could Stony Brook University survive as an NCAA hockey program?
100% yes. 100% yes. And it's not me being emotional about it or me being biased about it. You know, look at the dynamic of Long Island, right? How many people are in the NHL just from two counties, Nassau and Suffolk? Six guys from two counties are playing in the NHL. It's a hotbed. How many guys are on NCAA Division I rosters just from Long Island? Not that you would get guys from Long Island only, but there's like 18 or 15 to 20 that are on NCAA Division I rosters from two counties. Again, we're not a state. So when you think about it, and you also think about it, the New York Islanders are now in Brooklyn. The New York Rangers are in the city. If you want to go see a competitive, high-level game, you know, a Division I team coming in to play Stony Brook like Boston University or BC, and geographically it makes sense. So financially it won't be that – it'll be a burden, but it won't be as bad because you don't have to fly everywhere because you just go around to Connecticut and Massachusetts and play those teams. So it geographically makes sense. Long Island is a hotbed. People would come watch, make ticket sales. It is it's a no-brainer. Unfortunately, the powers that be, they're not hockey people, and they don't really understand the dynamic of hockey, and they don't realize, you know, I've been how many years my entire life. I'm 44 years old, so I know Long Island and the dynamic, and yeah, it would be an initial cost. The ice rink would be about $25 million for a 4,000-seat arena, which is the biggest problem, and then you're going to have about $750,000 a year in a budget. You know, $700,000-$800,000 is what's going to cost you a year because you have to have scholarships you have to give because you're Division I, coaches' salaries, all the other stuff that come along with it. But as far as successful, yes, 100%. I think it will be the most successful program, NCAA program they have at that school because people will come. And if people come to watch, they'll get better players and they'll get, you know, the wrinkle if they get a right facility. So people always ask me, why aren't you guys Division I? You know, it's not that easy. You have to do a lot before you get to that level. One, you need a rink. Two, what kind of a rink? People always say, how much does a rink cost? I don't know, how much is a car? It all depends on the kind of car, right? It all depends on the kind of rink. If you're going to do it right, because otherwise that'll hurt your recruiting because you don't have a facility that is going to attract the guys to come here. So I know exactly what needs to be done, but I'm not the one that can pull the trigger to make it happen. They're investing in their football program. They're investing in other sports at the school. Unfortunately, they're not investing in the hockey program. I think the success we've had as an organization, not only as our wins and losses, but if you come to one of our games and you see the fans are packed and it's in a 400-seat rink, we get 400 people, that just is a testament to what we've done. And we're not an NCAA team. We don't have an athletic department behind us, and we're really successful. So imagine if we did. Those are the things I will tell you. It is a sore subject with me because, you know, you're doing so much and you're putting so much effort into something. And, you know, the school should really look at it. They're looking to build out the football stadium and make more stands in the football stadium. But if I ask them, does the football stadium get packed right now with the existing stands? And the answer is no. My guys go there all the time. And they ask me, why are they making the stadium bigger when they can't even pack out what they have now? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. But it is a good question, right? So I guess somebody feels that if you make it bigger, more people, I don't know. So it's one of those things. There's Title IX issues. You'd have to have a women's team as well. So there's a lot of other things that go along with it. It's not just snap a finger and make it happen. The first thing is we need an owner. We need somebody that's willing to put up, or a few people, the money to build the facility, and then the rest will fall behind it. But it starts with a rink.
All right. You guys open up the season September 30th against Kent State. Coach, thank you for taking the time, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Coach Chris Garofalo from Stony Brook Hockey. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Zach Braziller from the New York Post, and we'll recap that insane finish to the Giants-Eagles game. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Okay, and we're back here on Sports Talk 1240. I'm Andy Sukoff. And before we bring Zach Braziller on, I have to admit, I need to eat a little bit of crow. This morning, I joined Andy Madison on Kick Off Your Sunday, which if you missed that show, you missed out. It was a very fun show. We had Ryan Dizdier from Gotham Sports Network talk about the Giants game. And we briefly touched on the Jets a little bit. And I said that there was no way that the Jets were going to beat the Miami Dolphins. And I'm more than happy to eat crow on that one because, hey, the Jets won. With a 20-6 victory over the Miami Dolphins, they went to 1-2 and essentially shut the Dolphins down until the last play of the game where Jay Cutler finally threw a touchdown pass to Devontae Parker in garbage time. Jay Ajayi couldn't get anything going. He averaged about a yard a carry. And with that, the Jets hold off on their tank for Sam Darnold or one of the other quarterbacks for another week, but I'll get to that a little later. I want to bring on Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Zach, what a finish at Lincoln Financial Field today! I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, that was a wild fourth quarter. I mean, the Giants offense finally wakes up and puts up 24, and then they make four bad mistakes in a row, and the kid kicks a 61-yarder. You know, Giants are 0-3. I don't think anyone in New York predicted this.
No, I mean, coming into the season, expectations were high for the New York Giants. They're in a division where the Redskins are kind of in flux. The Eagles are on their way up, but not quite there yet. So it was them and the Dallas Cowboys. And then they played Dallas in week one, and their offense goes nowhere, just like it had been for the last six games of the 2016 season, and then they just kind of kept spinning their wheels until the fourth quarter in today's game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Giants were the best team in the division. I know a lot of people did. You know, they went out and they drafted a pretty good looking tight end, Evan Ingram. They signed Brandon Marshall. They had
you know, they bring back basically everyone of note. A team that had a very good year last year and made the playoffs. I mean, and it just, so far, nothing's gone according to plan. You know, obviously Beck doesn't play in that first game, and he clearly wasn't himself last week. The defense has been solid, but not quite as dominant as last year. And Eli's been really shaky until the fourth quarter today. I mean, they're 0-3, and, you know, they're trying to search for some positives. They talked about the way that they threw the ball today in the fourth quarter, but that obviously also, you have an Eagle secondary that was down 3 starters, so I think you have to take that into account as well.
Now that they're 0-3, do you start sounding the alarm bells, or are we still too early in the season for that?
No, I mean, I think you have to. I mean, you play 16 games. There are one more game, and you're a quarter of the way through the year. I mean, I don't think they're dead by any means. They have no margin for error now. I mean, you know, you would think at minimum you have to get to 9 wins to make the playoffs, so they got to go 9-4 the rest of the way. And, you know, they have tough games left. They have the Broncos. They obviously got to play the Redskins twice. They have Dallas and Philly coming to New York. I mean, but they have no time to mess around now. They have to get things going. Now they have to go to Tampa next week, and Tampa is a pretty good team. At least has looked solid so far. I don't think alarm bells is premature at all. They have to get going.
We're talking with Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Odell Beckham had his coming out party for the 2017 season this weekend, getting the 2 touchdowns. But I think some people might have been rubbed the wrong way by his touchdown celebration on the first touchdown. He makes an amazing catch and then pulls a stunt where he acts like a dog going to the bathroom on the Eagle in the Eagles' end zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we've seen from him. That's like my co-worker Steve Surrey says, that's the whole package with Beckham. You know, he's going to do some stuff that you probably don't like. You know, he's going to act like a clown sometimes, but he's also a tremendous talent, and you saw him take that game over the fourth quarter. I mean, the second touchdown catch was absolutely unbelievable. And the first one was obviously very impressive. And he opened up everything for that offense. When he started making plays, you saw Shepard making plays, you saw Marshall doing it. It changes the whole dynamic when he's himself, which clearly he wasn't in the game against the Lions on Monday night. You got to accept that he's that good that I think he can accept these antics he calls, because he is that much of a difference maker. And when he's right, to me, he's the most dynamic receiver in the game.
Do you think he'll be fined for that, or do you think the league will let it go?
I think a fine could be coming. I mean, it was, you know, he got a penalty for it. It was a pretty silly thing to do. They just scored a touchdown. They get back in the game, and, you know, to pretend to pee in the end zone like a dog was, I know the entire press box was pretty stunned by it. I would think probably a small fine will be coming his way.
Yeah, you're talking about how Odell Beckham opens up the offense. We're starting to see, you know, we spoke about it earlier in the week, how, like, during the Monday night game, how Brandon Marshall was struggling to get open. And today he had a noticeably better game now that Beckham is healthy. Do you think that's just going to continue to improve as the season goes along?
Yeah, I mean, with Beckham, it opens up everything. You know, you saw Shepard had a big 77-yard touchdown catch. You know, Marshall's going to get a ton of single coverage when Beckham is healthy and out there. Shepard's going to get a ton of single coverage. The tight end will be more free. You know, when you have a player like that who just needs to create so much attention, you're only going to see more other guys have more opportunities, because they're going to be facing the teams with lesser corners and will be getting single coverage. It's clear the Giants are a different offense when Beckham is himself.
One of their biggest struggles, though, today was the running game, or lack thereof. Only 49 yards rushing. And that's, I don't know if that's indicative of the whole offensive line or just the offensive game plan, where they are a pass-first team because they have a guy like Odell Beckham. But having only 49 yards rushing is, like, that's not conducive to a winning team.
I mean, it's been like that the whole year so far. They're not running the ball. I think part of it, they're a passing team. I think part of it, the line is very good. I think part of it, they don't really have a big running back. I mean, I think you have to look at all those three things. I liked Perkins a lot last year. I was impressed by him. I thought he made guys miss. I thought he was physical. And we just haven't seen so so far this year, what we saw last year. I think they should give Darko more of a shot. He's more of a north-south guy where when you don't have a great offensive line, I think you need that. You don't want a guy who's dancing around. You want a guy just going straight ahead and giving every yard he can. I think they gave Darko more chances today than they had given him. I'd like to see them do that even more. This isn't going to be a traditional Giant team that's going to run for, that's going to run the ball 30 times a game. It's just not. You don't have the personnel. You don't have the offensive line. You have all this talent out wide. It would be a disservice to the roster to be a run-first team, I think.
We're talking with Zach Braziller from the New York Post. When you saw that field goal going up, did you think it had the distance, or do you think that Beckham was going to get a chance to take it out of the end zone?
No, I thought it had no chance. I thought it was going to be 10 yards short. I mean, if you see it when he first kicks it, it was so low. And it looked like it was going right anyway. I was stunned it went over. I think everyone was. I mean, if that was a 61.5 yarder, it probably hits the crossbar. The guy made a great kick. He made two big kicks. You know, he tied the game with a 46 yarder with about a little under a minute left. I think it was 51 seconds. And then obviously he makes that 61 yarder. It's just the way the Giants season is going right now. You know, they have a big fourth quarter. And the guy kicks a 61-yarder. Although, like I said, they had four plays that really just led to it. They had the Flowers holding. They had the bad punt. They had the 19-yard pass to coverage, and Jenkins and Apple run into each other. So they did set it up themselves for the kick.
And when Brad Wing put that punt up at the end of the fourth quarter, and it goes only 28 yards, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, God, this is almost like what happened in that game, I think it was in 2010, when Matt Dodge kicked it to DeSean Jackson, and he took it all the way to the house. He gave the Eagles great field position, and the Eagles had started moving the ball on the Giants again in the mid to late part of the fourth quarter. And, at first I was thinking, okay, just kick it away from Torrey Smith, get it to, the 25-yard line, go to overtime, and see what happens there. When it goes only 28 yards, I'm sitting there going, uh-oh.
Yeah, but I think it wasn't just the punt. You know, you had the holding. You had Fareed running out of bounds, and you should have stayed in to eat clock, because the Giants were not going to score there. You obviously have the punt, and then you have the play with 7 seconds left where they somehow get a 19-yard pass and get out of bounds when the Giants had two guys right there. So it was basically four plays in a row the Giants botched that gave them a chance for that field goal.
And those mental mistakes are the biggest killers for NFL teams, and those are the ones you can't get back.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, right now they're a bad team that, as well as it played in the fourth quarter today, found a way to lose this game. They have way too much talent to be 0-3. I mean, I don't see this season, unraveling to be like a 4-12 type year. They got to figure this out, though. They got to find a way to win a game because it's getting late early.
Now, next week they go to Tampa to play the Bucks, and the Bucks are coming off with a big, humiliating loss to the Minnesota Vikings, who were without Sam Bradford, and Case Keenum led them up and down the field. When you're going on the road to face a team that's expected to contend for a playoff spot, how much does the mindset change if you're Ben McAdoo in practice?
I mean, they're not going to change much. I'm sure they're going to – I could see them being really positive all week because they did play well. They did have that lead twice in the fourth quarter. I think this is a week where it's basically trying to get their confidence back. I don't think you're going to see a lot of negativity. They know they got to win a game to get things righted. Tampa is coming off a really bad performance. I'm sure the Giants think this is a game they should win. I think it's just, continue with what we're doing. That's the mindset is going to be. We're getting closer. That's what you're going to hear from Matthew a lot this week.
And now that they are starting to get healthy, I think that's going to be only a big help to the offense. If they can get that offensive line, kind of more stabilized, and Ereck Flowers not take holding penalties at the absolute worst times, which has been a big holdup for him since he got into the league. I think he should be back over on the right side. That's just my own opinion. I'm sure others feel differently and that they believe he could get to the left side. What do you think on that?
I mean, I just don't think they have – I think if they thought they had someone better left tackle, they'd put someone there. I just don't think they have anyone there. I thought the offensive line was better today. I mean, I think part of it was there was a lot of three-step drops, a lot of quick passes. But it was better. You know, Eli wasn't sacked five times like he's been sacked. They did improve. You know, the time to get a left tackle was the offseason, not middle to late September. There really isn't a guy there. With the way Flowers has played, if there was someone better, I think they would put him there. I just don't see it.
We're talking with Zach Brazil of the New York Post. Talk to us a little bit about Evan Engram and what you've seen from him in the first three games of the season and what he's brought to the table thus far.
I mean, he's an athlete. He's very athletic. He can really catch the ball. I mean, it's pretty clear. He's got tons of ability to stretch the field. You know, we haven't seen a ton from him blocking-wise. That's obviously an area of games that he needs improvement on, but I think it's pretty clear this guy is going to be a big pass-catching tight end in the league. I mean, he's got a ton of ability. I think that's been, you know, if you watch the Giants play through three games, that's been readily apparent.
Obviously, the big story in the NFL were players taking a knee or raising their fist during the anthem. What was the reaction at Lincoln Financial Field when a few of the Giants took a knee and the Eagles came onto the field?
I didn't notice a big reaction. I didn't hear any boos. It was the home opener, so I think they were pretty fired up just for a game. That there really wasn't much of anything. I know in some places there were boos with a lot of players dealing, but you really didn't see much of that out there at Lincoln Financial.
And this was the first time that any Giant had actually taken part in this. Do you see that maybe increasing over the next few games, or do you think it's going to kind of stop here?
I got the feeling that this might just be a one-time thing. You only had three Giants there. Landon Collins made it seem like he was doing it just to support the other two that were doing it. Olivia Vernon talked about, you know, after all the comments, he felt it was the right thing to do to send a statement. But I don't know if this is something you're going to see every Sunday from them. It really depends what is said and how, you know, is this story going to continue or is it going to kind of die down? You know, if there are more comments from the president, there's more pushback, maybe it does increase. But I don't get the sense this is something the Giants want to continue with that unless they felt they needed to.
And then their next three games are against out-of-division opponents. So if they can get a couple wins here against some non-division opponents before getting back into division play, I think that would only help their confidence. So, you know, here's hoping that they do get there, especially when they play the L.A. Chargers, who can't get out of their own way at this point.
I mean, they've given themselves no margin for error. They got to get going now. They got to win games now. They're 0-3, and this is a team that's got to start putting wins together, putting good weeks together. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's now or never for them. You can't go to 0-4. You can't go to 1-5. They gotta start trying to sneak back towards .500.
Are there any players that are guys like Roger Lewis or like any like the depth players that you could see start making bigger contributions in their quest to get those wins that they so desperately need?
I mean, I could see it with Darfur a little bit. I could see him, if he's given more of a chance, making more of an impact. If they want to try to get, you know, Brett Jones for now is playing left guard. He's obviously important on that offensive line. Those are, to me, a few guys you can look to. Otherwise, I mean, the stars are the stars. They need these guys to play better. You know, you sorted the fourth quarter a little bit. They just need more consistency. They need their big players they're counting on to play like it.
And that's something that they're going to have to work on in practice, see the game film, see what they did well in the fourth quarter. And there was a lot that they did well there, and improve on that, because they've shown that they can play. they've got to put it together for four quarters. And, you know, not to sound cliche, but, you know, that this is the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, there's confidence in there, though. They talked a lot about how they saw positives in that fourth quarter, and they think they're getting closer. They think if they could just bottle up that fourth quarter, that second half, and put together a full 60 minutes, that this is a team that's going to start ripping off wins. Especially the guys on the offense talked a lot about the positives they felt were there. So, I mean, they obviously have something to build on. You know, they can't take any more. You know, no time for moral victories now. 0-3, you got to win right away.
Just to take like a national outlook of everything, who's been the most impressive to you in the first few weeks of the season in terms of team play and maybe even individually?
I think the Chiefs clearly. They're 3-0. They obviously, you know, manhandled the Patriots in New England Week 1. They won again today. They beat the Eagles last week, and the Eagles, I think, are a pretty solid team. You know, the Chiefs look really good to me. I mean, you know, there were a few teams I really like coming into this weekend before, and they didn't play very well. The Broncos had a rough day. The Steelers lost a bad game to the Bills, you know, to the Bears. And you're going to see this every week, but one team, I mean, you got to look at Kansas City. They're Atlanta's off to a really good start, too. Those are the two teams, I think, that are off to the best start. Obviously, the Patriots are 2-1. They came from behind to beat the Texans, and you never can look past them. But right now, my two favorite teams that are playing the best are the Chiefs and the Falcons.
All right. I'll give you one more question before we let you go. You know, I'm sure you're watching the Sunday night game. I don't want to take you away from that. I don't know if you saw it in today's game between the Steelers and the Bears on that blocked field goal, and the Bears lineman basically pulled a Leon Lett and slowed down before the end zone. How can you, if you're a coach, what do you say to somebody like that after that happens? Especially right at the end of the half. You get a play like that, and you should have a touchdown, and instead you only get 3 points.
I mean, it depends what kind of player it is. I mean, it depends what kind of coach it is. Certain coaches are benching the guy. Certain coaches are sending a message. It depends if the guy is how valuable he is. Could you afford to bench him? Could you afford to sit him out of game? But it happens. You know, you see it how you saw it. You know, mentioned Leon Lett. You see it happen all the time where guys, you know, they stop, they slow down, and they pay for it. It's something we see all across sports, not just in football. And, you know, obviously coaches handle it different ways. And it'll be interesting to see what they do there in Chicago.
All right, Zach, thank you for taking the time, and enjoy the rest of your night.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
That was Zach Brazil from The Post. Love having him on. He's a great reporter for The Post. I personally read his stuff every day. And it's great to get a guy like that on to talk about football and college basketball when the season comes around. He's very, very knowledgeable. We got a couple minutes left here in the show, and I'm just going to jump back to the Jets for a second because I still have a little bit of crow I need to eat. The Jets, over the next couple weeks, they play Jacksonville and Cleveland. They play at home against Jacksonville next week, and Jacksonville's coming back from London, and then they go to Cleveland. Could the Jets be 3-2 by the time I'm on the air next on October 15th? That is a distinct possibility, and I never would have thought that coming into the season. I did, at 8 a.m. this morning, when I left here after kickoff for Sunday, I said for sure the Dolphins are going to be owned. We're going to beat the Jets so badly that there will be only Dolphins fans at MetLife Stadium come the end of the game. I was wrong. So could the Jets go 3-2? I don't think so. But crazier things have happened, and who knows what's going to happen next week when the world-beating Jacksonville Jaguars, who took the best defense in football right now, the Baltimore Ravens, and wiped the floor with them in London. This morning, so I'm going to play football with some friends. I'm listening to the game in the car. and all I hear is Jaguars touchdown, Jaguars touchdown, Baltimore punts, and I took the Ravens as my survivor pick this week. So rest in peace, my survivor pick. 44-7. That's embarrassing. If you're John Harbaugh, that entire 8-hour plane ride from London back to Baltimore, I'm probably yelling at my players the entire way. Maybe taking an hour to take a drink and take a quick nap, but then going right back to basically ripping the players a new one because that performance today was utterly pathetic. And on that note, I'm going to end this show, and I want to thank Chris Garofalo and Zach Braziller for joining me tonight. I'll be back here on October 15th. You're not going to want to miss it then. I'm going to have some fun guests again, and we'll be in hockey season by that point. And you know me, hockey's the best. Let's go, Rangers. I'm Andy Sukloff. Have a good night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.